Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. We are, this is the first podcast ever of Street Smarts. And we don't have a theme song yet, so we decided to use that because it was the closest thing. My name is Matt Bonavita. I'm here with Nick Shelsey. And our engineer for today is Yakov Leonov.
Hello.
Yakov.
Yakov is our resident non-Gentile.
Right, he was going ethnic right there. He's culturally Jewish. He's not actually Jewish. Okay, so this is an experiment. So we're going to try every week to do a podcast where we review, Nick and I review something that's going on in pop culture. Right, Nick?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think we got a good topic this week.
This week, our topic is Spike Lee's documentary, Michael Jackson's Journey from Motown to Off the Wall. And for those of you who don't, we realize that the first people listening to this are going to be, you know, our 20 friends and, you know, 50 family members.
Nonsense. It's going to be the millions of listeners right across the airwaves.
Amen to that. But Nick is a firefighter, a lieutenant in the FDNY. I'm a teacher. Yakov works IT for the New York City Department of Health. Right, Yakov? Is that... case?
No, I'm a consultant.
You're a consultant with the New York City Department of Health?
Wrong again. I work for the New York State.
Okay.
So I think this perfectly qualifies us to speak about our next topic.
Right. Which is going to be Michael Jackson's Journey from Motown to Off the Wall, directed by Spike Lee. It's on Showtime. So if you have Showtime anytime, you can watch it. And the other thing I want, before we get started, I want to point out that Nick, Yakov, and I are all DJs. We work for the company Rhythm in Motion, which was founded by me in 2003. And Nick's been with me since 2004 and Yakov since 2010. And Yakov is the one who works every week at M15 in Tribeca. So he's probably at this point the most off experience, especially in the month of February, right, Yakov?
Yeah, that is correct.
Okay. So,
especially for Valentine's Day.
Yes. Ooh. So if you want to check us out at rhythmandmotion.biz. You could read all about us. But in the meantime, let's get started. Just a real quick summary. Michael Jackson's Journey from Motown to Off the Wall is directed by Spike Lee. It features interviews by Questlove, The Weeknd. Who else, Nick? Pharrell.
L.A. Reid, Kobe Bryant. I think they did a really good job. They really went around and ran the gamut on people that they interviewed, you know, whether it be people that worked with Michael at a young age, right up into his first solo album, Off the Wall, but also just people who he inspired. Right. And I remember I was actually sitting on my couch channel surfing, and I didn't realize that there was even this documentary that existed, and I saw it, and I was like, oh God, I got to check this out, as my wife was asleep on me, which is usually the case. She sleeps. She's an early riser. She's an early riser, but she usually falls asleep with me on the couch. So I have to channel surf and try and find, you know, things. Cause I just stay up till all hours of the night, and I was watching it. And I remember halfway through it, I was texting you, and I was like, oh my God, you got to watch this. It's an unbelievable documentary.
Yeah. And, you know, like you said, there's, you know, Pharrell, Mark Ronson, John Legend, Kobe, you said, Quincy Jones, but Quincy Jones wasn't interviewed. I think they just got archival footage of Quincy Jones.
They weren't updated.
And Jackie and Marlon Jackson, who are probably in their 60s, but boy, they look great. Must be the money.
Yeah, but I really wouldn't, if I saw Marlon Jackson in the street selling something, I probably wouldn't buy it from him. Doesn't look like the most trustworthy person in the universe.
They're not as glistening as they were in the 70s. They're not using the Soul Globe.
No, they need that. They got to let it shine through.
So we're going to play a little clip. Well, actually, it's actually a clip, not the trailer, from Michael Jackson's Journey from Motown to Off the Wall, directed by Spike Lee on Showtime.
Don't stop till you get enough. Had this kind of like this opening groove, right? And the opening groove kind of sets you off. If you were a dancer, you know, you let that sink in.
I always use Michael as first and foremost as a vocal inspiration. And Off the Wall was definitely the one that made me feel like I could sing. I found my falsetto because of Off the Wall. Don't stop till you get enough.
Had these bizarre lyrics, well, to me, these bizarre lyrics that were quoting Star Wars.
I didn't even know he was saying, keep on with the force, don't stop. I thought it was about forks. When I was a kid, I was just like, keep on with the forks? I didn't know what the forks were.
All right, so once again, that was a clip from Spike Lee's documentary, Michael Jackson's Journey from Motown to Off the Wall. So let's start off with what were the things that kind of jumped out at you, Nick, in terms of the things that why you first realized it was awesome?
Well, I didn't realize, first of all, I liked the way that they just chose his beginning, the genesis of the Jackson 5, him as a young singer, a young vocalist with his brothers. And then it just worked its way up to Off the Wall. Usually, you know, you kind of sometimes lose sight of Michael Jackson because of the later years and everything else and Neverland Ranch and Bubbles and all that other stuff. And sometimes you forget what type of incredible artist he was. And I think this documentary, I didn't realize one thing that really stuck out with me was I didn't realize how smart he was as a youth. At his age, that he was kind of always interested in not only, you know, the different styles of music, you know, when he
right,
was
not
with
just
Motown,
the vocals, you mean, right?
Right, but also just writing and why'd you come up with this type of lyric and even the production when he was with I think Berry Gordy, I didn't realize how precocious he was, and it was really interesting to see that part of him.
Smokey Robinson wrote a song. This wasn't in this documentary, but he was talking about it was a song about how his woman left him, and Michael was singing it at 8 years old. And Smokey Robinson's like, "How can this kid sing this song like this?"
Yeah,
he goes,
yeah.
"How does he know what it feels like for a woman to leave him?" And you know, it's kind of a theme with that he almost acts out all of his music. Because you know, when you think about some of the words, they're ridiculous when you put them with Michael Jackson. Because yeah. But then when you listen to him, he sells it. So I guess I don't know if you want to call it acting or just performing. But he owned it. You wanted to jump in there, Yaakov? You grab the microphone.
Oh. I'm just holding the mic.
Okay.
Psych.
Yeah. So he. The journey is interesting, but I wanna just jump into a couple of things. As DJs, you listen to what guys like Questlove said and Mark Ronson said. Questlove talked about a certain point where he was talking about the song "Don't Stop Till You Get Enough." He said he would hold the beginning part and he would keep looping it. Hmm. You'll appreciate this, Yaakov. He kept looping it for like a minute, and people would get all hyped up, and then he would finally drop the "whoa" part. And the people would go crazy because they immediately recognized Michael Jackson. And I said that, you know, his music is timeless. And I talk about this all the time. Now, you can drop Billie Jean at a bar mitzvah or at a club on a Saturday night in New York City.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it doesn't even matter. It definitely transcends race, gender, creed. It's just an unbelievable. He as an artist, it was just so transcendent. But the dancing, the lyrics, his vocals, everything that he did was just so original.
And you know, he had he was also, for lack of a better word, he had balls. You know, again, not something you necessarily think of with Michael Jackson. You don't think, oh, Michael Jackson, he had balls, because it always sounds like he has balls hasn't dropped yet.
Yes, it's true.
But he had balls because he took chances on things. And one of the things was leaving. That was one of the things in the documentary, leaving Motown.
Yeah. Yeah. And how I didn't realize that one of his brothers actually had to stay.
Yeah. Because he married, what's his face? Jermaine married Berry Gordy's
daughter. Daughter. Yeah.
So he was screwed, but the rest of them left. And he left because he believed in himself, which is great. And you know, you can't, basically you're guaranteed a certain amount of money. They'll keep producing hits for you. You'll just have to go out and sing them and bam, bam, bam. But he needed more than that. And that's kind of, again, that's ballsy. They were talking to those, and I should have made better notes, but they were talking to the two producers that were at Epic Records.
Oh yeah. I think, Kenny Gamble and, forget the other guy's name. Who worked with him,
The Sounds of Philadelphia.
Yeah,
in Philadelphia.
Right, when they, right.
Yeah, that's how well prepared we are right now, folks.
You know, we've been doing this so long, sometimes you get a little lax.
Yeah, we're already 11 minutes in.
Yeah, actually 11 minutes, because the intro takes about 30 seconds.
Okay, right. So we're seasoned veterans, but they worked with him, and, you know, another part of it was not trying to be too disco-y.
Yeah, yeah. And I love the way they break down the album too, once they get there. I mean, the beginning and everything, and how Michael is as a kid, all the way up to Off the Wall, and then how he wanted Quincy Jones. Nobody wanted Quincy Jones because, you know, they didn't feel it was the right fit. And here it is. He wants Quincy. He works with Quincy, and it becomes this masterpiece, and they go through every song. And I love the way they went through every song, and just all the explanations that they went through with it. It was just, I thought it was really well done, especially having even guys like Kobe Bryant, who, Kobe Bryant's a basketball player, but I guess they took it as somebody like a child prodigy in a sense, where he made the leap from high school basketball, being an 18-year-old kid, and then playing amongst all of these, you know, grown men. I guess it's kind of, you know, what Michael went through as a musician, as an artist.
Yeah, I think he related to the perfection part. I think that's what he got into. Kobe kept talking about perfection and what is perfection, and, you know, how, you know, even if you're good, talent only takes you so far, and perfection is when you have the talent.
His drive to just be perfect.
Right.
And even not to interrupt you, but even when they get to She's Out of My Life, and I know this was one of your favorite parts of the documentary, because we obviously as fans of comedy and everything with Eddie Murphy and Delirious, you know, I always laughed when he did that part, but I never really saw the video that they showed of him getting emotional like that.
Right.
I knew Michael Jackson could be emotional and everything else that connected the crowd, but I didn't realize how spot on his impersonation of him was with that video.
Yeah, Eddie Murphy was amazing. So if we before we even get to the actual album itself, you know, he leaves Motown. They start down this road with the Jacksons. They do their own kind of thing. They do songs that we like, that we play at gigs all the time, like Blame It on the Boogie. You know, that was a Jackson song. And they're trying to transition from this bubblegum, almost factory-type stuff into stuff that meant something. And again, you wouldn't think that songs like Don't Stop Till You Get Enough mean something. But when you look at this, and this is something I think we miss now too, and I don't know about you, but when I was a kid, I never appreciated what an album was and how hard people worked on the actual album. And that's the other thing. You don't get that anymore. Now it's just whatever song you can download, whatever you can grab off of YouTube or grab off of iTunes. Go ahead, Yaakov.
Well, not really. Now you have, like, collectors of vinyl coming out with, like, Urban Outfitters and Amazon. They're trying to, like, bring up the entire vinyl scene back.
Right, but the vinyl scene, that's cool, and I appreciate the hipster thing is cool, but they talk about the sound itself. They don't talk about the listing of the tracks.
Right.
You know what I mean? Do they? I don't. when hipsters talk about sorry, when hipsters talk about this, I'll give you an example. We just booked a wedding for next year, and one of our clients, part of on her contract, she wants us to play her first dance on a record because she has the vinyl.
Oh yeah, you told me that.
Yeah, yeah. So that's her thing.
Did she send you this piece of information on her typewriter?
Yeah,
with a carrier pigeon to your house?
Yes,
she hand delivered it to you.
Yeah,
in a burlap sack.
So
with organic meats. I'm sorry.
But her point, this, and if we want to have a discussion about this, her point was, I like the sound, and I guess it's the, and I think it's ridiculous. But you know, it's what she wants and what the client wants will always do. But I don't think that has to do with the way that you don't enjoy an album the way an artist creates it. Am I making sense?
No, no, you absolutely are. I mean, like sometimes, like when I'm listening to, like I'm going completely like differently when I'm, I enjoy listening to Kanye West and the way he like structures his entire album. It flows. That's the whole point of an artist. They make their entire album flow to show off their artwork, and which their creation, their child.
I think though, you know, getting back to that, I mean, like you were saying, when we first started DJing and you were teaching us even just how to beat mix with how the live bands, you know, and I think it was, you know, Mark Ronson who was talking about it, and Questlove would talk about it. They said that, you know, it's not, when you're taping the live band, obviously, it's not perfect. Some musicians are off, some aren't. They're slightly off. They're all together. It sounds amazing, but they're not, you know, 128
BPMs. They speed up. They
you
slow know, down. They,
yeah,
depends on how much coke they had the night before or what they were doing at that moment.
So that's why it's difficult for me to DJ.
But the, yeah. But yeah, so it's, and it's cool. It does give the album character. It, you know, it is different than the way a lot of the music is made now and recorded, obviously.
And here's the other thing. You don't think, you know, if you're listening to this, if some of our friends would say, especially the ones that love live music, that DJs aren't artists. If you listen to Mark Ronson talk, that was one of the things he talked about. He said that, you know, you can, the character, and Yakov, I think you'll appreciate this. He said in the documentary, Yakov didn't watch it yet, just so you know. But
I will watch it tonight.
Right. But the character of the, he said he misses the fact that the character of the album's not there anymore, because he said drum machines are great, but they take a lot of the character out. And that's coming from a DJ.
Yeah.
You know? So I thought that, wow, that's a pretty badass statement coming from him.
Yeah, and he killed it at the Super Bowl too.
Yeah, his, what, 5-second solo that he had?
Scratching is still scratching.
No, I'm not crapping on Mark Ronson, not at all. I'm saying that I was actually giving him props, because it's hard to say, hey, you know, the live musicians had it right. Or the live musicians gave you something that other people can't give you, or at least what drum machines can't give you. So I thought that was excellent. And it even went into, you know, Michael Jackson went on this journey from, you know, leaving his brothers, and he slowly went out. Because when you think about his first solo album, it was about a pet rat.
Which, actually, I wanted to get to that, because the only two things, the only other, really one thing that was more surprising than having, well, I guess I should say...
about a pet rat?
No, I didn't know Ben was about a pet rat.
Oh, okay.
No, I didn't. And now it creeps me out.
It
creeps me out. First of all, it just makes me want to see the movie. Because why would you make a movie about rats?
I don't think the movie did very well.
I hope not. And I heard this song for years and years, and I always just thought it was like a childhood friend of his who was a human being.
Right.
And now that it's this rat, I just...
But it really kind of works that it's him loving his pet rat, though, when you think about Michael Jackson.
It's awful.
Can you
I don't know if a rat is really an animal deserving of love, to be honest. I mean, unless it's maybe Splinter from the Ninja Turtles.
Right.
But,
right.
You know, but even he's kind of a little off-putting. He's not really the friendliest rat in the world.
Ninja, so you can't,
I think it's just not in their nature.
Yeah, look up Ben... from like the 1970s. How much money did that make?
I hope it made $11. That is the worst
thing
ever.
Hold on, let me check.
Don't look up the song, the movie.
Oh.
I've never heard, I didn't know that. I remember watching that 30th anniversary special, and that's when Billy Billy Gilliam, something like that. He was a little kid back in 2001 as a country singer. He sang that at the 30th anniversary special. And that I was like, what the hell is this? And I looked it up, and it was about a pet rat. Ben is in 1972. It's a horror film?
No, it can't be.
Hold on. It says IMDb. Let's look this up.
It should be. It sounds like a
would IMDb awful tell idea. Us tell us how much money it made?
No, that'll be Wikipedia.
It was nominated for one Oscar.
Wait, is that even the right film?
Ben was played. Yeah, this is it.
It was nominated for an Oscar.
It was written for the movie by.
What
Don
movies were out that year?
No, I don't know. The Godfather was out in 1972.
I thought that was 73.
No, I think The Godfather was for 72. Well, you know, I don't want to keep going off down this path, but Michael Jackson's first hit was Ben, and it was about a pet rat. And it reminds me of if you see the Netflix special about with the guy from with Jackie Chan, Chris Tucker.
Yeah.
He did a Netflix special, and in it he's talking about sitting. He goes, being friends with Michael Jackson was amazing because you could sit there and have a conversation with Michael, and all of a sudden a giraffe would walk by the the window. And you go, Michael, is that a giraffe? And I'm like, oh, Chris, it's two giraffes, two. And as Steve Harvey said, you may be rich, but you ain't giraffe rich.
Sure.
So Michael Jackson was giraffe
rich. It's a problem
rich.
We should all have.
Yeah. What do you got there, Yaakov? Did you come up with a number for Ben?
Wikipedia does not contain a number for that film.
Okay, thanks. All right, so
there's probably three copies of it still in existence.
I've never seen the film. You?
I have to see it now.
You could definitely pick it up at your local Blockbuster.
I have to see it. It's along the lines of, I'm sure, Sharknado.
Yeah.
Tusk.
Might be.
Listen, nothing beats Sharknado.
And and Rubber. And yeah. Human Centipede, of course, another timeless classic.
Right, and watch an ambient video just spin around the entire night. So he makes this journey. He goes from the Jacksons, and he does, which I thought was amazing. Not amazing, but I thought was interesting, some of the things about The Wiz.
Yeah. Yeah, and I never saw The Wiz until about a couple of years ago. Believe it or not, I was at work, and it was randomly on. And I walked into the kitchen, and I'm like, what in God's name is this? It looks like The Wizard of Oz, but I don't know what's going on. And Richard Pryor was in it and everything. And yeah, I never saw it before.
And Wicked Witch of the West gets flushed down a toilet bowl. That's really, but that was, it was a hit Broadway show and he wanted to be in it and this was his thing. So he was in The Wiz. So he's in The Wiz, and that's really where Quincy Jones and one of the producers of The Wiz describes Quincy Jones kind of coming to Michael Jackson, realizing how good he was at that moment.
Yeah, they didn't. I think they originally didn't want to cast him.
Right. No, they didn't want to cast him, but he was in it. And then Quincy Jones didn't realize how good a singer he was, how good he was.
Yeah.
And then he said it was kind of like all of a sudden you see somebody turn, and when he heard Michael Jackson start singing and getting everything. And
that's what really piqued his interest to do the Off the Wall album with him. And that's when Michael asked him, he was on board.
But they didn't want Quincy at the beginning.
Right. Right. Michael wanted him, but the company and the record label didn't want him.
So it was fairly, again, all these things, I guess, if you're a Michael Jackson fan, and most of us are in some way, shape, or form, would you agree, Yaakov?
Absolutely. I mean, like, I wasn't a fan of pop music before I started DJing, but then, like, I started to appreciate it even more and the random things that I could do with it. Right. And I'm like, oh, wow, I could bring back classics.
And that's the cool thing is that you can drop a Michael Jackson song, most Michael Jackson songs at any point, anywhere, and get away with it. You know, no one's going to hate you.
Oh, of course not.
You know, and you can loop certain songs. You can take certain pieces of songs. We still, to this day, play I Want You Back all the time because people start doing their Motown dances to it. Then you go on up to his stuff. Thriller, not as much, but certainly Billie Jean. Certainly Don't Stop Till You Get Enough. Absolutely. Certainly Want to Be Starting Something. Mama Say, Mama Sa, Mama Kusa.
Yeah, I remember when I started working for Rhythm Motion, you used to do that as Mama Say, Mama Kusa. You used to loop it like crazy and then play I Got a Feeling right afterwards.
Right. I Got a Feeling, or the other one we did at first
Rihanna.
Was Rihanna song. Yeah.
Rihanna, Please Don't Stop
Please
the Music.
Please Don't Stop the Music, which was another one.
Because she would say that at the end of the song. She would actually say, Mama Say, Mama Sa.
Oh, yeah.
She sampled it. So Quincy Jones works on this. They go through, and if you go through the track list, number one is Don't Stop Till You Get Enough. Number two is Rock With You. Rock With You isn't as bumping as Don't Stop Till You Get Enough. But again, it's a pretty badass song.
It's good to start off the night with.
Yeah.
I'll give you that.
Another song that I thought was good, and I wonder your reaction, Nick, was when they talked about working day and night, because it was that bass line. Working day and night. And yeah. We never play it.
No. But yeah, and that's another thing about this documentary. Sometimes it brings to light songs that, you know, you're like, oh man, you know, I never realized that this song's really good. Maybe I could use that. Like, you know, not only do you want to listen to it more, but you want to maybe use it, you know, as a DJ, you know, maybe incorporate it into a set or something like that.
Yeah, and it goes again back to hearing something like Questlove kept talking about the drumming of it, that bass line is mm-hmm. so that people can hear that and immediately recognize the songs, which is true about a lot of his songs.
Yeah.
You know, you hear just the bass line and immediately like, oh shoot.
It's true about a lot of songs. Like even like you'll hear the guitar riff for Sweet Child of Mine. Mm-hmm. You'll hear those chords, you know, and you just know. It doesn't matter where
but
you
I,
are.
I would dare to say that Michael Jackson has a lot of those.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, you know? Absolutely.
Guns N' Roses had one.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying as far as those those riffs or those you know, beats that you'll hear and you just know immediately what song it is.
But I'm not going to front. The rest of the songs outside of Off the Wall, I didn't know that much about. But they kind of looped them all in together, and it made a whole lot more sense and taught me a lot about Michael Jackson himself. Now, my question is, you know, Kobe kept talking about it, you know, how this has to be, he wanted it to be perfect. He wanted to be perfect. And I think he won the Best New Artist Grammy, right?
Yeah.
Michael Jackson for this.
Yes.
And then, but it wasn't on television.
Right. Yeah, they spoke about that, how they kind of pigeonholed him into they made it Best R&B album, I think, or something like that. So, and they gave it to him while it was off the air.
Right.
You know, like a TV timeout, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, which is so incredibly disrespectful.
Okay. And what Yaakov showed us the Grammy Awards he won in 1980. He won Don't Stop Till You Get Enough, the Best Disco. Wow. Okay. And
it is disco-y.
Yeah, no, he was nominated.
Oh, he was nominated. He didn't win it.
But
okay.
He won Don't Stop Till You Get Enough for Best R&B Vocal Performance by a Male.
I guess that's what he got beforehand.
Yeah.
Where they didn't even give
Yeah,
I guess
well, it's like I said, R&B.
Right.
And R&B, they, you know.
Right. They didn't deign it.
So he was
to be on TV.
So let me get this straight. He was nominated for Best Disco Recording. But one for Best R&B Vocal Performance for the same song.
I mean, Wikipedia does not lie.
No, I realize that. I'm confused on how you could call one song two different things and win a Grammy.
But it also shows how, like, there is that, you know, that's Michael Jackson's crossover appeal, right? Where later on in his career he'll do black and white and do a guitar riff in the middle of it, or was it Beat It? He has a guitar riff in the middle of it.
Yeah.
So you're doing, you know. What would you classify Beat It as? Pop music, right?
Yeah, it would have to be pop music. I mean, because it's not rock and roll, you know.
But it has that Eddie Van Halen guitar riff right in the middle of it.
I mean, it's just sampling. That's what it is, probably.
Well, Eddie Van Halen played that.
Oh, he did.
But yeah, he did play on the album.
But it would be kind of similar to like Walk This Way with Run DMC and Aerosmith. Like, yeah, there's guitars in it and everything, but there's rapping and so it's kind of like
that
more.
Wasn't that song more more wasn't that first an Aerosmith song?
It was first an Aerosmith,
first
and they
Aerosmith
sampled
song,
it.
And then they sampled it, and then they
collaborated. They sampled it, and collaborated together. But if you just took that song for itself, you know.
No, but I just think it's kind of endemic of Michael Jackson's career, because you can't always pin him down into one thing. And that was another part of like why he was so brilliant, is because he would oftentimes take different pieces of different things and incorporate it. And I guess that's why he became, all you could say is what he was into was pop music. Because it's not one thing or the other. So even here, in the first time he gets nominated, you can't even classify it as something. Because disco dies. Disco's already dead by 1980. And they made that very clear in the documentary.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And yeah. Kind of apropos that the last song was, you know, but Burn the Disco.
Burn the Disco Down, right? What was it? Burn This Disco Out.
Yeah, Burn This Disco Out.
And who was it, Nick? Mark Ronson, who said that the it holds up because it didn't get kitschy or it didn't add in.
Yeah. Yeah, that I believe it was Mark Ronson that said, yeah, if you would have added
claps.
Yeah,
claps
for claps. Yeah. It would have been a
right. Claps would have been a disco thing. I don't know what would have been a 1980s new age thing. I know I remember seeing Billy Joel that time where he said that my brother Anthony took me to a question session. I asked Billy Joel a question. He said that he started off the song Goodnight Saigon with those sound effects of the helicopter.
Oh, yeah.
He goes, I don't know. I was into sound effects back then. And then he started thinking about all that stuff, glass houses, like when they throw the brick through them. He like he did love sound effects. Then he'd have a motorcycle revving at some point or whatever. So and that does kind of date it.
Yeah.
It does kind of date it. But, you know, you could play. I remember specifically coming back from New Orleans and the week after some girls we had met down there were up in Salty Dog in Brooklyn and they came up to me and they said, could you play Off the Wall? And those girls, if you remember, were what, 30, 29? Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So, and I'm like, Off the Wall? And you know, she was barely alive when Off the Wall was, was around. And I said, the song Off the Wall, the whole album? She goes, no, I love the song Off the Wall. I'm like, wow, it really does cross generations.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
I think though, so now I know we've been having a love affair with this.
But you have a problem with it.
But no. I mean, nothing is 100% perfect, except, of course, this podcast.
Right.
And so is there anything I'd like to pose the question because I know
what you're going to say.
there was a couple of head scratches in this. And,
I know what you're going to say. So I don't want to take your big reveal out.
Well, I as like I said, I was channel surfing. I really didn't know much about it. So I was watching it and I thought the documentary was really well done. But some of the interviews, I say to myself, why is this person being asked about Michael Jackson? Are they his friend? Are they what? And it turns out when I saw at the end, it said a Spike Lee joint. I obviously they interviewed Spike Lee, but they interviewed a lot of people. So I wasn't sure who actually did the documentary until I saw that. And I said, oh, it makes complete sense now, because why in God's name was Rosie Perez?
Mm-hmm.
And for that matter,
because she was a dancer.
And, it had the blasphemous title of actress and then choreographer.
Right.
I want to know what she choreographed in her life
right. That
would make her. I mean, and even I watched it again the other night. Why was John Leguizamo? I love John Leguizamo, but what? It's like, you know, he's sitting there and he's like, yeah. And so I listened to Michael Jackson when I was a kid. And then when I was in high school, Michael Jackson was still around. And then college, and he was always around.
So Pharrell and John Legend and them are okay because
They're musicians.
Okay,
and,
all right, don't yell at me. I'm just curious.
And they're producers of music. And then Rosie Perez, what did she bring to the table? You know, sometimes we went to the park and, you know, you had your, I may be dating myself, you had your radio or, you know, your record, I don't know who brought a record player back in the day to the park.
Well,
and she talks about listening to Michael Jackson. And I'm like, why am I listening to this right now?
I have no idea.
Is it like, what, did she choreograph a scene in White Men Can't Jump where they were playing basketball? I mean, I don't really get it. Was Sydney listening to her while he played basketball?
Well, didn't she date the other guy?
Well, she was with Billy.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe they should have asked her, like, what foods start with the letter Q.
Right.
And she could have went back on Jeopardy.
Is this a reference?
Yes. Okay. Well, we were talking about White Men Can't Jump.
Well, right.
Her prolific acting career.
Is that the only thing she's in? No, she's in
Do the Right Thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is there a Spike Lee movie?
Forgettable moments.
Yakov, that she's in? A non-Spike Lee movie that Rosie Perez is in?
I hope not. And she was, she was good in Do the Right Thing and everything, for what she is.
They date? Is that what happened?
I don't know.
I remember he's hooking up with her in Do the Right Thing as on camera.
I love the...
She's 51, by the way.
I gotta love the... I also gotta give props to Spike Lee for showing his John Dewey High School picture.
Yeah.
I mean, class picture. That was I laughed. That was amazing.
That's...
And he tells that story about that girl turning him down when he got the tickets to to go see
The Wiz. Wasn't it The Wiz? It wasn't Ben. It was The Wiz.
It was The Wiz.
Right.
And she turned him down anyway, even though we had center orchestra seats. That was.
And then he sold them for double, which was what, $5?
Yeah, yeah. Well, at least he made money on it, but
good for him.
We should all be so lucky when we got shot down in our youth.
Well, I don't really have a whole lot of issues with, unlike you, I don't have any. I mean, Rosie Perez, I could give her two shits about. I thought Jennifer Lopez would have been a good get.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, at least she is a musician, actress, right, and she dances.
She was a choreographer.
I mean, she's not much of a vocalist, obviously, but I mean, you know, she at least, I mean, I understand that directors, you know, will always go to certain. Quentin Tarantino does it with Samuel L. Jackson and, you know, Travolta, things like that. I mean, I know they have their go-to actors and actresses they're comfortable working with, and, you know, it's, I get it, but when you're doing a documentary, I just don't understand why you would pull these people out. I mean, I don't know. I just, it kind of just, it was very bewildering.
Are you disappointed that Rosie Perez was in it, Yaakov?
He didn't see it yet, remember?
I didn't see the show yet.
Come on, man.
I mean, we're ruining it for you now.
I mean.
Spoilers left and right. By the way, now that Michael Jackson dies in 2009.
No way. Oh, yeah, my God.
I'm sorry, dude. Oh, dude. And I mean, that's scary because that's how crazy he got.
I'm leaving.
Are you leaving?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
You ruined the show for me.
He's devastated. Sorry.
But you know, like, we're going to, you know, we should wrap this up soon because we're already up to 37 minutes of this and people are probably like, all right, wrap it up, boys. But, you know, part of this is, it's as good as it is, it's also, for me, the worst part was how sad it ends up being because, you know, he ends up dying because he's taking what? Uppers to get up in the morning and propofol to go to sleep.
Yeah.
And propofol is a...
Basically puts you into a living coma.
Yeah, it's an anesthesia.
Yeah.
Don't look at me. I'm a computer scientist, not a medical doctor.
Well, I think it was an anesthesia, but it is an anesthesia, and you're not supposed to sleep with that. But overall, I mean, I don't know how you want to do this, Nick. You want to go three stars, you want to go thumbs up, thumbs down? Would you tell people to watch it?
I would
tell people
definitely tell people to watch it. I definitely recommend it. You know, and even if you're not a Michael Jackson fan and just a fan of music with an open mind, I think it's really interesting to see, you know, just the lead up to Off the Wall and how they go through the album. I think it was really, really well done. Just you know, just ignore Rosie Perez and John Leguizamo, who I'm a big fan. I love John Leguizamo. It kind of pains me in a personal way to even talk trash about John Leguizamo.
Well, you're not talking trash. You're just saying, why was he there?
Yeah, I just didn't understand why there. I mean, I don't even have really anything against Rosie Perez. I mean, she really made, you know, she had a pretty good career for having absolutely no talent.
Well, maybe she was the one who was supposed to be the fan, just the regular fan.
And
voice,
just have to add this. You know, it struck me, I guess, because I was watching. I'm a big fan of boxing, and I was watching. You know, it was the lead up to the Paulie Malignaggi, Danny Garcia fight,
right.
And who was interviewing them? Rosie Perez.
Oh, no.
And once again, mystified. But she, you know, I got to give her credit, though. She's wily because she gets these gigs, and she has no business getting them.
Maybe
so
it's kudos, the street
maybe
thing.
Kudos to Rosie
Is she
Perez.
From Brooklyn, too?
Yeah. Oh,
is she from Brooklyn? Did you see?
I think she is. But
I
you know
she's
what?
From New York.
Yeah.
You just had a Wikipedia page
Rosie
up.
Perez.
Don't lie.
I don't know. I think
she's
is, but.
Bushwick. That's Brooklyn.
That
Hello.
Is Brooklyn.
All right. So maybe
she's
it's like
a hipster.
Because Malignaggi.
Yeah. Born in Bushwick, neighborhood Brooklyn, New York.
That was when Bushwick. Well, now it's Bushwick. East Williamsburg. It's not Bushwick.
That's when
anymore.
Bushwick was
it's,
you know.
It's North Carroll Gardens or
Or Bowick or right. Whatever.
So what are we?
South.
South.
We're South Slope, I guess. That's where we are.
South Slope. Okay.
We're in Bensonhurst, yeah. South Slope. Super South Slope.
I've had people ask me, it's like, where is Bensonhurst?
Slopey.
It's on the way to Coney Island.
Slip and Slope. We're Slip and Slopehurst.
But we won't drown if there's a hurricane. That's the only difference.
Yeah, that's the best part.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess we're going to wrap this up. Nick says that he would absolutely recommend it. And let's, you know, I'm not giving anything away here. He already said that at the beginning. They told me to watch it. I absolutely I agree. I think that I learned a lot. And if you are into music and if you're a DJ, that it really speaks to you. It's sad only because you know what ends up happening to him. You wish shit would have gone different for him. When I was a kid, Michael Jackson was the shit. I had a Thriller poster on my wall because I'm 5 years older than you. So I was like 7 years old. I had Thriller on my wall. And I remember he was the coolest, baddest motherfucker on the planet. And you wanted his jacket and you wanted to learn how to moonwalk. I still can't freaking moonwalk.
You wanted his monkey.
Right, absolutely. Definitely a giraffe or two.
Definitely a giraffe. I mean, and who doesn't want a freaking amusement park in their backyard? I mean, come on.
Shit.
Maybe I wouldn't have called it Neverland. It's a little creepy, but, you know, I mean, hey.
So, this is our inaugural podcast. Let us know if you like. Click the subscribe button on your iTunes if you downloaded this off of iTunes. You can, if you listen to this on YouTube, you can feel free to leave a comment, but I'm not going to read it because usually people just leave bad comments. Reach out to us.
Aren't we uploading this on SoundCloud?
Oh, and SoundCloud too.
Honestly, I mean, if you want to leave a bad comment, I understand. You know, it's a free country. Everybody's got an opinion. But, you know, just on a personal note, go fuck yourself. Seriously, go fuck yourself.
Right. And, you know, don't leave Yaakov out of this. Anyway, this has been Street Smarts, our inaugural podcast. Thanks for listening. And, we'll see you next week when we review maybe Zoolander 2. What do you think, Nick?
I don't know. We're going to do whatever we want. It's our goddamn podcast.
We should do Zoolander 2 and Deadpool.
Nick might want to have to do the NFL draft preview already. So
that might take 3 days.
That might be next week. So
huge draft nerd.
We could have it in parts.
Well, we could do defense, offense. I don't know.
Yeah,
could get ugly.
Yeah, I'm out on that one. I'll talk to you. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you. Good night.